Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wooden. With me this afternoon is my co-host, as always,
Chad Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So, Chad, corporations, they're large, giant entities. One of them just became even larger. Let us rejoice and or give grievances for the fact that 20th Century Fox has now become acquired by the House of Mouse.
So I'm going to speak on this completely as a nerd comic fanboy and say that this is awesome because Marvel proper now has X-Men and Fantastic Four back. They loosely have Spider-Man back, so every little toy they've ever had is in their play chest. I'm excited for that because, you know, Marvel has been on a roll and they seem to be doing their characters right. And X-Men, to most people that grew up, you know, in the 90s, was the thing. X-Men, even in the comic form, it was always a question of Avengers who? The Avengers in the comics didn't become like a real thing until after the movies came. X-Men was always the crown jewel. Well, not always, but post-80s was always the crown jewel. So having them back is exciting. Personally, I don't give a crap about that. Give me the Fantastic Four, which can finally be done right under Marvel. And with the Fantastic Four comes all of the glorious characters of Galactus and Doctor Doom and Silver Surfer, etc., etc., etc. So that's what there is to rejoice about. Now, outside of fanboyism, there's going to be a lot of people that lose jobs over this.
So let me do a public service announcement because I feel like fanboys are getting trashed by, again, the upper elitist cinema nerds who like to dance on our graves and fart on our faces. So no one on the internet, on Twitter, on film Twitter, on nerd Twitter, on Marvel Reddit, or any other version of Reddit, no one is saying that this is a joyful thing, that two giant conglomerates have merged together and that there is now less competition. There is no rejoicing over the fact that Fox 2000 is going to no longer exist and that it is more than likely going to be absorbed to some extent by Fox Searchlight. No one is rejoicing over one less art house studio. Like, no one is dancing in the streets because, you know, 4,000 people are going to lose their jobs.
At minimum.
Because you're talking about duplication of purpose. Because, I mean, Disney has marketing people. Disney has public relations people. You know, Disney has graphic designers. You know, it's just, it's a natural thing. No one, yes, people are excited about the possibility of the X-Men and the Fantastic Four after 2021 joining the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yes, we're excited at the prospect that Phase Fantastic Four can actually be a thing. But no one, and I repeat this, no one on the internet is saying that this is a blessing to the world. We're all just saying that there are benefits, but the reality is it is a world-changing event for the movie industry and for the individuals involved in the hiring and firing practices. I just don't know where this narrative came from that we were all just, you know, it was like the end of Return of the Jedi and we were all dancing in the streets to John Williams music and having campfires and dancing with Ewoks over the fact that X-Men and Fantastic Four were going to be back with Disney. It was not a thing. Yes, it's a benefit, but like, no one, there were just as many people when this thing was announced back in 2017. There were just as many people saying, hey, look, Disney had X amount of percentage of the total domestic box office revenue this year. If you add in the Fox totals, the Fox movies that were released this year to their total, they would make up exactly 35% of the total domestic grosses by themselves. Like, they are going to take up a huge chunk of the market space. We had this same conversation ages and blows ago about Microsoft and whether or not they were a monopoly. We had the same conversation about the AT&T Time Warner merger. I mean, we've had the same conversation about AT&T buying DirecTV. I mean, we've had these conversations every time a huge gigantic merger comes along. So where the idea came from that, like, it's all just about the Batman gets to the fact that like Reed Richards gets to meet Tony Stark is now the greatest thing in the world came from, I have no idea.
It's just because when the news happened initially, everybody was like, that was the first thing. Marvel's getting the Fox characters. That's what we want.
Hey, initially my first thought was that we get more Avatar sequels.
You would be the one. The one person. Though it makes sense because, you know, in Animal Kingdom, in Walt Disney World, is the Avatar thing. So it behooves them to make their property, you know, grow, at least for the time being, because they have a vested interest in one of their theme parks. Outside of that, I don't care.
I care because we could get a Gremlins movie again.
Well, they've been talking about that for, what, years now?
We can get an Alien movie again.
I did see that.
We can get Predator done more correctly, where more people actually see it instead of just me three times.
I did see that somewhere, and I don't remember where, so take it with a grain of salt, that they might steer Alien more towards TV than...
Well, that's possible, but, I mean, Ridley's got to be crying somewhere. This means he's probably never getting to make another Prometheus movie.
Well, if you made a better one the first two times, who knows?
Yeah, well, Mr. Blomkamp's still disappointed, so...
Yeah, he's the biggest loser in all of that one.
And, you know, Goddard may end up being screwed again, because, I mean, an X-Force movie could be taken off the table now.
I saw something about him doing something with TV. I don't remember what it was.
Maybe the man's just destined to be a showrunner for, like, good TV shows.
Maybe so. I forget what... I don't think it's with Disney, but I saw him, like, have a deal to do some TV show kind of thing.
I mean, the man puts The Martian on the tee for Ridley Scott and leaves to go do a Sinister Six movie at Sony that never happens. And then he leaves. Then he does Bad Times at El Royale. It becomes a cult classic immediately. And, you know, he goes to do, you know, an X-Force movie. And there's no guarantee that that's going to happen because, you know, they're going to do a Deadpool 3, but we don't know if they're going to do, if they're going to do an X-Force movie.
I think they still will because there's... No, the Deadpool corner of the X-Men is still in good shape, and you can properly phase them in, and nobody will bat an eye. It's the rest of them that.
Oh, you mean the Dark Phoenix?
Yeah, that movie.
The Dark Phoenix, directed by the guy who wrote X-Men 3, and ghost directed the Fantastic Four reboot.
I don't hold the Fantastic Four reboot against him, but he did direct X3 and First Class and Days of Future Past and Apocalypse. So, by my count, he's about 50-50, and that's being generous because I don't really care for Days of Future Past. So, to me, he just got one, which is First Class. Most people give him two.
Where the expectations were extremely low, and you're working with a very visceral, intimate director who is very... hands-on with everything that he does.
All of those adjectives to describe that director.
I'm talking about Matthew Vaughn.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, Matthew Vaughn. I was slinging those adjectives towards
Mr. Singer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That dude. Glad he lost his job.
Again, finally, yeah. After much public outcry.
He should. As soon as the report dropped, they should have just fired him. He should have never gotten in the first place. But, you know, I'm not going to get on my Brian Singer.
I think that this is a great look. Creatively, this was a power move by them because they needed streaming content.
Mm-hmm.
You saw the Apple announcement today. This is now a war. Like, everybody's jumping in. Everybody's going to try and fight. Disney wants to be the biggest, baddest dude on the block. They didn't feel as though what they had in their vault and Disney and Marvel and Pixar and Star Wars, Disney Animation, The Vault, ESPN, they didn't feel like all that was enough to conquer Netflix. And so they went and they bought a rival studio that's been around for 100 years to add their entire catalog to their streaming service.
And since that's all, what it's all about, that was the smart move.
Because they got ahead of the game.
Yeah, and I honestly think they will be the game. I mean, I know Netflix is the thing because they're established and people all have it and they don't know how much they pay for it and they just don't care because it's like, a minuscule amount, but...
But if the House of Mouse comes around and says, I'm going to give you all this content for $8...
And that's what they're going to do because they can afford to do it. And Netflix is, you know, when Netflix really started streaming, they were in the business of housing all these properties. Well, because everybody's starting a streaming service, Netflix is losing all of that. They're going to be focused on their original content, which is fine, but because they're established, they'll probably still be fine. But Disney's going to have all of this stuff that was pulled off of Netflix from them, plus the original stuff that they're adding. And I think eventually they'll be the game in town. Even I don't think Netflix will go. I don't know which one of them will shutter first. Somebody will. If they don't, we're going to be in a weird phase where we have all these streaming services. And we're eventually going to get to a place where somebody hubs them all together. And we're back to a new form of cable with freaking streaming services. We're back to where we started from.
I don't know that Apple will survive. And the only reason I say that is because from what I saw today, it looked very niche. It didn't look like they were appealing to the broad masses. It looked like they were appealing to film nerds like me, which is great. You know, the Criterion Channel. I'll sign up for that the first day it's available. But are you really going to be able to make money that way? And I know you have to carve out your own little niche, but come on. And then essentially we're going down a road that Vince McMahon has already trod, right? I mean, McMahon tried to get a cable-based WWE network going for years. And then he realized that the future was coming. And so he decided to do a online digital streaming network. And this is 2013, 2014.
It's been that long.
Before all this started. And so Vince was told, you will take a loss, a huge loss, for your first 2 years. But as soon as you get to 1 million subscribers, you will be at the same revenue that you had previously under the pay-per-view business model. After 2 million, after 2 million subscribers, you reach more profitability than you were even during the Attitude Era. And that's the way that this is going to work. Instead of Disney getting a check from Netflix every month for the content that is on their service, they are no longer going to be getting that check. Mm-hmm. They will now own that property outright. It will be making them no money except what they make off of the subscriptions. And they will have to pay for the original content, like The Mandalorian, out of pocket at, in some cases, movie production level budget to lure people onto that service. So you're not making as much money. There's going to be a threshold there that you have to meet to match the old business model. And it's a question of how long it's going to take them to reach that before they then can transmit over into profitability.
So I think your example of Vince is a good one, because when the streaming service started, everybody was like, this is dumb. But he was really ahead of the game, because now look at where we're at. And they're fine.
They've reached their 2 million subscribers. They are more profitable than they've ever been. Their stock prices are reflecting it.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that it's amazing is for the same reason that I think Disney Plus is going to be amazing, which is that right now, there are certain Disney films that if I want to go and watch them on Netflix, they're not there.
Yep.
So it was the same way with WWE. If I wanted to go watch an old match, I had to go to YouTube. And I'd hope that it was still up because Vince hadn't pulled it. Mm-hmm. You know, now when you give me WWE Network, if I want to go rewatch WrestleMania 17 at 2 o'clock in the morning, I can get on the network and I can rewatch WrestleMania 17 at 2 in the morning. If I just want to watch TLC 2, I can type in TLC 2 in the little search bar and it'll just bring me the match. Or I can just start WrestleMania 17 and scroll to the exact dot where that match starts. Mm-hmm. Disney Plus will be the exact same way. Now, do I think they're going to put Song of the South on there? No.
Hell no.
No. Do I think that there are certain parts of their legacy that they're going to still leave buried? Yes.
Even though they said everything's there, that is not coming back.
No, they're not going to put themselves in that position. But if I want to watch The Sorcerer's Stone, which is a Disney movie that doesn't get a lot of play.
Yep.
If if I want to go watch The Rescuers or The Rescuers Down Under, films that don't get a lot of play on Disney Channel or anywhere else. If I want to go watch Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century, because I haven't seen it in years, or Johnny Tsunami, because they were, you know, Disney Channel original movies were a thing in the late 90s. I can now go back and watch those. Whereas right now, if I go type that in on YouTube, I can't find it. So, like, they're going to have a selling point. And that the question only is, will that selling point be enough to get enough people to subscribe to make it profitable?
Well, so here's my thinking on that. Well, they've already said that their price is going to be below Netflix. They've already got the benefit of being Disney, and with them being Disney, just the things you were saying, like, I never, these Disney Channel shows you talked about, never heard of them. But Disney Channel is very specific in that everybody's age range has their Disney Channel shows. And if they're there, nostalgia will at least have them go take a peek at it. Then you have the Disney classics. And then I just thought about it, like, all the Disney shorts, I really like the animated shorts, and they're hard to find. And if all of that is there, Disney has so many avenues with so many different people. They're not catching somebody at just one entry point. They're catching everybody at multiple. And you're telling me that it's $8, so I can sign up for it. You can take $8 on my check. I can forget about it and just sit there. I think that's why I think their advantage is. Whereas all these other streaming services are going to have to grow. Because it's Disney, and you're already coming in with, this is all the stuff we all know you want. Plus, we're giving you all this other stuff on top of it. And it's cheap. People are going to sign up. I would think it would have to be the fastest growing streaming service whenever it comes out the gate.
Yeah. And Warner's will do the same thing shortly thereafter. And, of course, Apple will do their own thing. And Amazon will try to keep what they have and beef it up to compete. And we will just enter this place. And Disney's already tried it with ESPN. So they have experience with this platform now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the Fox deal was only made for this purpose. Yep. If we were not in a streaming war, Rupert wouldn't be selling off and Disney wouldn't have been a buyer. Comcast wouldn't have placed a bid. I mean, we're in the position now where Lionsgate may end up coming up for auction. I mean, every studio acquisitions is going to be a major thing because people are going to want content. If I'm going to start a streaming service, I need content. Content. It's why Netflix was trying to sign as many big-name showrunners off of TV as...
That's right, yeah.
...as they could. It's why, you know, Apple is, you know, signed a deal with A24. It's why they got Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon to sign deals, first-look deals. You know, it's going to be all about finding the creators of content and signing them up and locking them in so that you've got them and no one else does.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see. Is Apple coming out this year too?
I don't think it's 18. I don't think it's 19. I think it's 20.
Okay. Well, we know we're getting Disney sometime in the fall,
and we're getting Warner's, I think, sometime in the fall as well.
Warner's is an interesting one because I know they have the film catalog and probably a good bit of TV catalog.
Well, they would have all of HBO's catalog, right?
I guess.
I mean, you already have HBO Go, but I mean.
See, and that's the thing. If they pair it with HBO Go, then yeah, you're probably they'll grab more people that way.
Warner's film catalog is 100 years old, the same way Fox's is.
But, I mean, we got film nerds that really want those early movies, but most people are like within the last 20 or so years. And Warner's has a good enough catalog for that. Was it good enough for people to be like, I've already got HBO Go, I've got Netflix, I'm going to get Disney, I've got Hulu. Do I really want to add another one?
And I think Hulu subscriptions will drop because I think Disney will just offer more.
Well, with Disney getting Fox, they also get Fox's portions of Hulu, and they already started talking about packaging all this stuff up together. So if you get Disney Plus, you can package it with Hulu if you already have it, and throw in ESPN Plus. Bam, pay $15, you get all three, something like that. So I don't know if Hulu will suffer that much, especially if Disney decides to treat that for the ground where all of their more adult or edgy stuff goes. I think Hulu will be fine. Not as good as Disney Plus, but it'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I just, ultimately, at the end of the day, none of us are excited about people losing their jobs and being out of work. No one, except for the guy who did the Deadpool campaign. He was brought over, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
He saved his job. But, I mean, and we're disappointed for some of these projects that now will not come to fruition because of the merger. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the industry dictated this move by Iger. This is a power move done to win a war.
Yep.
And if there is no war, then, you know, the industry's in a different place.
Yeah.
So let's move on. We woke up one day, and James Gunn got rehired. How did that happen, Chad? With double secret probation negotiations.
What, it was last Friday? Or last Saturday?
Yeah, it was a news dump time, yes.
It was Friday. It was a Friday. And it was late Friday. Like, I was probably about to leave work. And I'm just sitting there, twiddling my thumbs, just biding the time. And it's like, I saw somebody. Oh, it was Peter Cerretta from Slash Film. He had this picture of this shirt that says, "Rehire James Gunn." And he said, "I guess I don't need this shirt anymore." And I'm like, what? Oh, so they probably got somebody for Guardians 3. Who is it? So I start scrolling through my timeline, and it's like, what? James Gunn is rehired for Guardians 3. And I had to sit there and read, and I had to keep going through my timeline to make sure I'm not reading the wrong thing. And sure enough, Disney rehired James Gunn, which, one, they never should have fired him. Two, should have rehired him a long time ago. Three, I never thought it was going to happen because Disney doubled down on firing him. And he went and got the Suicide Squad gig. So I thought, oh, he's done. So seeing this news, I it seemed impossible, but yet here we are.
And you add to that the fourth thing, which is that he's going to be allowed to do Suicide Squad before touching Guardians 3.
Yeah, which I know they said in the press release, Alan Horn, who fired James Gunn, and has since in that press release said it was his decision to bring him back, mostly because of how James handled being fired in the first place. I really want the timeline of how this happened, because he couldn't have gotten, they said this took months. It's been done months ago. But it had to happen after James Gunn got Suicide Squad. So how does that timeline roll out? And what are those negotiations like? Because it has to be after James Gunn signed on the line for Suicide Squad. If it happened before then, that's even more... I'm more impressed with James Gunn at that point. Because then he's like, I'll let you rehire me. But I've already been talking to them. I've been writing this script. They want me to direct the movie. I mean, it's not my fault that I got fired. I don't think it should be my fault I lose this job. Because you fired me in the first place. So one day we'll figure out that timeline. I'm kind of curious. I really would like to know what it is. But, if it's after he got Suicide Squad, this is not even a question. It's like, well, I got to honor my contract. And they're like, yeah, we got to let you honor the contract. But that's fine. We want you back. If it's before, it's like, well, then he pulled a king move and he won.
Secret negotiations that were ongoing that no one in Hollywood knew about, that agents were putting out their feelers for their guys to try and get hired to take the job. Feige, sitting on a Captain Marvel press tour, answering questions about this, saying, you know, we're just going to, you know, James Gunn's, you know, his impact on the cosmic side of the universe has been way overstated, but we're going to use his script, and it's, you know, we're just going to take our time with the Guardians franchise. Dude had to know this. Dude had to know this was coming. And matter of fact, I would not have been surprised if it was Feige who had insisted or tried to convince Alan Horn to continue to talk to James over the course of the last, July to March.
Mm-hmm.
To talk to him, continuously have a conversation.
Oh, I believe that happened without question, because they said they didn't see anybody else to direct this movie. That means, and Feige was pretty well known. Feige didn't want James Gunn fired. So he just sat on his guns and was like, I want James Gunn, and I'm just going to sit here.
You two should talk.
Yeah.
You should have a conversation, because I really don't think that you really are getting the full impact of this. Just go talk to him. Walk in the park and have a conversation.
Also, while you're trying to talk to him and change your mind, I'm just not going to make that movie that's already become like our second biggest franchise in our stable, and we have some pretty big ones. But I'm just going to sit on this movie until you, you know, change your mind.
Well, we had that conversation when they were announced that they were going to use James's script. Like, we were like, there's no way you're going to find an actual A-list director to do this.
Yep, nobody's going to touch it. No A-lister's going to touch it, and
you'd have to go get a shooter.
Yep. And, I mean, they went and got a gun.
Yeah.
But I'm, in this day and age, with the scope and the enormity that Disney brings to anything, the fact that they went back on a decision that they not only made, doubled down on, and still came back off it.
It's a letter. Remember the letter that the cast wrote? I mean, there was a public try to get him rehired.
But I thought I thought all that would work. I thought they would make the move to rehire him, but I thought it would have been right around the time that letter happened, not 6 months down the line. Again, they did all that letter and all of that, and after that, Alan Horn was like, no, I'm not doing it. And Bob, tell him. And Bob Iger was like, he made the decision. I stand by what he said. Everybody's here stands by his decision. So, I mean, Alan Horn doubled down, and then he got his boss to come on and co-sign for what he said and was like, now what? It's over. Leave me alone. And then he came back and reversed the decision. So, whatever James Gunn was telling him, he told him some real good stuff. And because, I mean, he is the biggest winner out of that. He gets two franchises from the two biggest comic studios going right now. And he gets everything. He would not have gotten Suicide Squad doing Guardians 3 before he got fired. He gained a job, probably gained a very lucrative job, and the job that he had already that he wants to finish up.
Yeah.
Yeah. James Gunn wins.
James Gunn wins. He was the natural fit if you were going to do a Suicide Squad reboot and he was on the open market. He's the free agent you go after. Because you were basically trying to copy Guardians anyway with what you were doing the first go around. The bright color palette, the music drops, the odd, goofy, group dynamic. Idris replacing Will Smith's going to be interesting, I feel.
Yeah.
But that's what you were trying to do, and he's the guy, he's a free agent. Why not go after him?
No, that's the smart thing to do.
Right. So, I mean, and Disney had allowed him to do that, and I for one, do feel it was after he had signed the contract with Warners. Mm-hmm. Now, does that necessarily mean that they couldn't have bought Warners out?
I mean, yeah, they probably could have.
But you don't want to engender ill will.
Yeah.
So you just let him do his thing. What's crazy is this going to push Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 all the way to probably 2024.
Let's see. Suicide Squad comes out next year. So he couldn't start it until 2021 at the earliest. So, I mean, at the earliest is 22, probably 23, somewhere around there.
After a 2018 release.
Well,
May of 18.
It was
May of 17. Because that was the year.
For two? Yeah.
That was the way you had the three. You had Guardians 2, Homecoming, and Ragnarok in 17.
Yeah, yep, that's right. Yep, it would have been Guardians.
They were fast tracking it too. I mean, they were building sets in Atlanta.
Yeah, they were going to start last year, and be filming this year to come out next year.
They were going to start filming in February of this year, and then the Comic-Con stuff happens.
Yep, and all they had, and that was the part that got me. It was like it happened on the Friday of Comic-Con.
Your news is going to get so buried.
Yeah, that was it. All you had to do was just sit there and ride it out. You didn't even have to ride out a whole day. Just ride it out that night. Because it dropped on, again, it was in the afternoon because I was about to leave work again when all this stuff happened. All you had to do was just ride it out Friday. It's gone. It's gone. You might get a little trickle here and there, but it's gone.
All right, so let's move on. Chad, there was a set visit done this week. That dropped multiple set visits, actually, that have dropped this week.
Oh.
Hellboy being one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're trying to remind people that that's a movie that's coming out because they've done a very poor job of letting people know that there's...
That movie's going
to
suffer so much because of this.
Yes. Harbored playing the role I think is going to be good in the trailers that I've seen have not been terrible. It's just that there are not enough of them, and the studio is not letting people know that there's a Hellboy movie coming in like 4 weeks. This is also 3 weeks. This is
less than, yeah.
3 weeks, which is also your reminder that we are exactly 1 year away, 1 month away from Avengers Endgame. Exactly a month from today.
Yes, that's right. That is right.
But Godzilla had its set visit. Your thoughts, sir, on Mutos and the Monarch organization and Molly Bobbin Brown's mother in the movie having developed a secret device that can help communicate with the animals.
Oh, that's why she's there. Okay. All right, so I'll be honest about Godzilla. I want to see it, but if it's like the last one, I only want to see the end. Because I just want to see the I'm going to be there, dude. I just want to see the monsters fight. I don't care about everything else. I just
want to see the monsters fight. You don't care about Oshaya Jackson?
No. Why? Is he Godzilla?
You don't care? You don't care about Kyle Chandler?
Is that Mothra?
No.
If any name you say is not associated with a monster, I don't care.
Well, and see, that's the beautiful thing of the set visit, because the director is pretty much telling you this is going to be a giant monster fight movie, that we're going to utilize the human plot to basically be the mechanics for getting monsters to fight.
Thank you. Do that. That's all you got to do. Just take my money, let me sit there, stuff my face with popcorn, and watch Godzilla blow atomic breath in another monster's mouth. Because that was the best part of that movie, and I don't think we get it again, but damn it, that was good.
Well, they actually have the big three now. You know, you have Ghidorah, you have Mothra, and you have Rodan. So, I mean, like, they don't have to make up monsters like they had last time.
Well, I mean, it's going to be... It's going to be fun to see the classic monsters up there, because even though I have very limited Godzilla knowledge, I know who they are.
The most exciting prospect of this is like when you... The best example I can equate to is like 2001, and like you know that Phantom Menace sucked and that it was horrible and that it was stinky. But then you hear that the title of episode 2 is going to be Attack of the Clones. And then you get all these, you go back to Obi-Wan's original speech about serving with him in the Clone Wars, and you start having all these dreams of fantasy about what the Clone Wars could be, and you know that there are computers, and you know that they've done the dinosaurs for Jurassic Park, and so you know that they can do amazing things with computers, so how awesome is this going to be?
Yep.
And then you get the movie, and whatever happens, happens. But that's the way I am with Rodan, Mothra, and Ghidorah. It's like, you know, Roland Emmerich destroyed Godzilla. We got a way better Godzilla in 2014.
Yes, I'll
agree. Was the largest on screen ever. And now we're going to get with digital technology, with actual advanced CGI and mocap, Mothra, Rodan, and Ghidorah. And I could not be more excited.
I can see that.
Because we will not be the guys in rubber suits. And they did not, none of those popped up in Emmerich's movie. And they couldn't use them in the previous Edwards movie. So this is really their first true introduction to American audiences.
This is true.
So, I mean, I can't wait, personally. And that's what has me the most excited, is that technology allows for Ghidorah not to look like a complete, you know... disaster. Having three heads.
That's right.
The three heads, and then Mothra emerging from the volcano, and you know.
Yeah, all that. All that's gonna be cool.
The color palette looks good in the music. The music cues they used for the trailers looked really good. And they're marketing it decently. They'll do more marketing after you know, April gets here.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm excited by what I read in the set visit, really.
That's good. I'm looking forward to it. I think I will enjoy it more than the last one, which I did like.
So, Jordan Peele will be making all the money.
Lots of money. Let's see.
I mean, you have to understand, for a horror movie to make in its opening 71. Frame. 71. Yeah.
It's the highest opening for a horror movie.
No.
Is it not?
Nope. It's below the Halloween movie from last year.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
What did that open to?
More than that. I mean, this is a film that demands to be seen multiple times, which is part of what accounts for that large figure.
That's what I've heard. I'll never know for myself.
No, you won't.
But that's what I've heard.
We established this. I mean, but we saw it personally, firsthand, coming out of the movies on Saturday.
Yeah, because I was like, why are all these people here?
Why are all these young African-American folk here? And it's like, well...
Oh, yeah. Us came out.
Yeah.
Go for it. Go support Jordan Peele. I'm with you in spirit, because I ain't never walking in there.
Lupita Nyong'o kills everything. Except Masquerade.
Okay. It took me a minute. Me a minute to get that one. Got it.
Where's that lightsaber, Chad? Where did that lightsaber come from? It's a very interesting story that I need to be told.
Well, I mean...
Has she filmed scenes for Episode 9? I demand to know this. This should be the first question at the panel for Episode 9 at Star Wars Celebration. Before we even get a trailer or a title, the first question should be, is... Maz Kanata in this film, and does she tell us where the lightsaber came from?
So, I don't think you're going to get that. Don't think that's going to be first question. I doubt it's down the line of questions, but I completely forgot about Maz. So,
well, that's because she was only in a short green screen thing in a hologram shooting things last time.
That's right. That was unfortunate because I like Maz. She could be interesting.
Yeah, and she'll be very interesting in a television series somewhere down the line.
I'm sure she will.
Because that's what's about going to happen. But this movie, being as awesome as it is, and being as layered as it is, and having such positive word of mouth, did a great amount of money. And meanwhile, Captain Marvel also did great money, as it's on its way to $400 million domestic, ranking around 10th, 11th. It cracked the top 10 this week, as far as MCU movies overall. You know, it's still holding fairly strong, a 35% drop in its third weekend. You know, it's on its way to $1 billion, and we'll cross $1 billion next weekend. That's pretty impressive. It'll be the seventh Marvel Cinematic Universe movie to cross $1 billion.
Yeah, take that, dude, bros.
Well, it will make more money overseas than it will domestic.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting box office question that I had posed to me at like 4:30 this afternoon by a coworker is, we know that Infinity War did not finish domestically as the number one movie of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Does Endgame make less domestically than Endgame than Infinity War? Does Endgame make less domestically than Infinity War? Because traditionally, Part 4s are very rare, and the Part 4s that do exist that outperform Part 3s are also extremely rare. I think it's a couple of very good examples are... historically, are Star Wars 4, Star Trek 4, The Voyage Home, and which outperformed The Search for Spock. And the other example would be Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2, which outperformed Part 3.
Was that 4?
Mm-hmm. And then you have, of course, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, which is just, you know, Part 4 of an 8-part series.
Yeah.
Part 4s are very hard to come by, and that's what Toy Story 4 is going to run into. It's they're very hard to come by, and the number that outdo their number 3s are very rare. So the question was, you know, yes, the opening weekend might top Infinity War. Infinity War's opening weekend was $257 million. We both are working under the assumption that 290 to 300 is an obtainable number for Endgame.
Yep.
So it might start off with more, but will it have the legs to go through the summer and eclipse 278.8?
That is a good question. So it made most of its money in the first 3 weeks, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. 338, 147, 80. And those are the worldwide numbers.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's going to be close. Because I know at the end of the month, well,
You've got Godzilla.
The next week you have Detective Pikachu.
Well, you have nothing before it.
Oh, yeah. There's a week. But there's a week.
There's nothing before it. There's it. And then there's a week that's been vacated. Yeah. And then there's the first week of May.
Yeah.
Where you got May 10th or whatever it is with Detective Pikachu.
Okay.
And then you've got Godzilla Memorial Day weekend.
Aladdin somewhere.
Aladdin right around that same time frame.
So I always forget that it's coming out at the end of April and not the first week in May. So since it has that week gap, I think you can do it because it doesn't have anything, even as minuscule, anything that's going to take away from it a little bit. Like Detective Pikachu taking away from it in the third week, where this one made 80, I think the Endgame could still make somewhere around that, but I think it can make more, and it'll make more in the first 2 weeks. So that's what'll mitigate that, and it should give it. It'll probably end up with more.
So if it does a $300 million opening weekend,
mm-hmm.
and it has a 56.4% drop the second weekend like the previous one did, so you're still looking at
like close to 150,
right? Which would top the 147.
Yeah. And then another 45% drop. It's still more than that 80. So, yeah, if it gets over 300, it should do it, unless people just hate the movie.
And that's the question I think we're all going to have about this. We don't know what the conclusion is. And, you know, for as controversial, quote-unquote, as Infinity War was, it was definitely the part one of a part two.
Yeah.
And while it was controversial in the fact that people got dusted in the decimation, you still had the foreknowledge that there was going to be another movie. So there wasn't like the anger and upsetness about people being dusted, because the belief was they'd be brought back. If they kill people, and they don't kill people in the proper respectful ways that fanboys want, will fanboys turn on it and not do repeat viewings?
That's always the thing.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on. Chad, we have both seen a lovely, lovely movie called Shazam. It makes both of our hearts great with joy. Have you seen a more fun movie in 2019 than that?
No, not yet. But to be fair, I've only seen like three movies in 2019, maybe. But either way, I adored this movie. I thought it was really, really good. The description of big meets superpowers is an adept one.
It is literally played to and referenced in the film.
Yep. Yeah. I just enjoyed it. It was just a fun time at the movies. I mean, some DC fans, or certain DC fans, might have a problem with it because it is fun. And it does not hide that it's fun. It goes.
But so was Aquaman, man.
Yeah, so Aquaman was, but it's not. It is fun, but it's not fun like this is fun. Like, this is like in your face. I'm just here to have a good time. Aquaman is still like, we're fun. I'm a dude, wrote it up, and I'm bash some people over the head. This is like, nope, fun. Just unabashed joy of being a superhero. That's what this movie was all about. And it showed, and that worked for this movie. And I think anybody that sees it will agree that it is that. Now, if you don't want that kind of thing, then you might have a problem with it.
I can't wait to see The Rock play in this universe. With that writing and with that tone, I can't wait to see The Rock play in this universe.
Yeah, he was, if you watched the credits, because there were three. Are there three? I mean, technically, there are just two, but really, there's three credit scenes. And right in the middle of them, executive producer, Dwayne Johnson. So he, if you thought he was out of this universe, technically, he still is. And I can only imagine that the success that this movie is going to have is going to embolden him to get this Black Adam project up and running, so we can see him and Zachary Levi do, bro, like, fight it up in a Shazam 3, which it's got to be coming.
Well, I mean, the thing that I found interesting is Dwayne has been constantly like, dude needs his own movie. And it's like, well, I mean, they could do that, but it'll draw immediate comparisons to Black Panther.
So, in the comics, in recent years, the focus has been more, like, out of all of the Captain Marvel family, the focus has been in solo comics, or in, like, stories in general, has been Black Adam. So, in that regard, he's, like, justified in thinking he needs his own movie. However, after this one, he really doesn't. But
the movie sets up the world very, very nicely.
Yeah. So, if they did a Black Adam movie, they're gonna Scorpion King it, where it's this character that belongs to this world, and we're gonna see how he got to where he is. And you can do that and make him the anti-hero. But by the time he meets up with Billy, he's full blown. Okay, he needs to be stopped, and Billy might be out of his depth, kind of thing. But you don't have to do it. They can just go straight into Shazam versus Black Adam right now.
Could, and I hope that that's what they do, because as we both know, The Rock has like 9,000 things on his plate at all times.
It was said either earlier this year or late last that Black Adam is in the process of, is actually actively moving and will be shooting like next year. And I think that will hold true after this movie comes out.
What are you expecting opening weekend? I haven't laughed that much in a movie in a while.
I think the audience response is going to do this movie well. I do think that WB needs to kick up the marketing a notch. This movie could, like, with the right marketing, which we passed the point of right marketing, because they should have been putting stuff, a lot more stuff out than they have so far. It could have potentially touched 100 million. I think on the high end, like if it gets 70, it's a win. I hope it does more than that. I think anybody this season is going to tell their friends, go see Shazam. And the Rotten Tomato score is already out. And it's like, last time I looked, it was like a 94. All of that kind of good word of mouth is going to do wonders for it. So if they just keep pushing the movie out there, word of mouth is going to do the rest. The fact that they screened it 2 weeks earlier, they dropped the review embargo 2 weeks early, they have all the confidence in the world. Now just it needs to be met with making more people aware that this is happening and this is how people feel about it.
I tend to agree. I would tend to agree. Lighthearted, fun, 80s feel. I mean, it family-oriented, literally. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, you know, for a guy, and honestly, the places chops work the best is Kornberg or Sandberg. The places chops work the best is the opening, like first 20 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like you those suspense elements really work, and the jump scares work, and I really like the way that they set the mythology up. I like the lesson that they're trying to teach. I liked everything about that movie, actually, and I'm really hoping that it makes a good amount of money.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it again.
Indeed. You will be seeing that. I will be going to see Pet Sematary on the same day.
Yeah, you can have that.
Yes. So speaking of things that I can have, Zack Snyder wants to let you know that the murder bat was not a bad thing. You're just a pansy who hasn't lost his movie virginity. And you should go home to your basement and cry to your mommy. Zack's been quiet. Give Zack credit. He's been quiet for, you know, Justice League was what, November 2017?
Mm-hmm.
He's been quiet for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I'll set this up because Zack didn't just pop up out of nowhere. He's doing, over the weekend, he did a showing of director's cuts of three of his movies. I know it's Watchmen. Is it Dawn of the Dead?
Shaun of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead and Batman vs. Superman, the Ultimate Edition. And he did a panel after each one. Or during, yeah, it was either before or after each one. I think it was after. So when we're going to talk about Zack, it's because this. It was a panel that was live streamed. People could watch it. And these are some quotes that came from it. This first one is about Batman. And so I set it up. I will preface everything I'm about to say now as If you've listened to this, you know I defended Zack to a certain extent about all these movies going up into and a little past Justice League. Truth be told, I think I love Man of Steel. I do think Man of Steel has problems. I do think most of those problems are creative decisions that came down to Zack. That is fine. After that, I think every problem from the DCEU starts and stops with Zack's vision for these characters. Now, Zack is completely within his right to have this vision. Warner Brothers greenlit it, and then when they saw what the vision was and how people reacted to it, they panicked. They could have let the thing continue forward. I do not think the reception would have gotten better. People did not like Zack's vision. I think his vision would have stopped after Justice League, even if they had never tampered with that movie. So I have nothing against Zack as far as his vision goes. It's not, once you got to Batman vs. Superman, it's not something that I wanted to see, but they let him do it, and that is complete within his rights. Now saying all that, he lost the goddamn mind over the weekend because, again, he can have his thoughts, he can have his ideas of the vision, but these quotes show he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand his vision doesn't align with what people want to see out of these characters. So, without further ado, I'll read this first one. So, here's what Zack had to say about Batman killing in Batman vs. Superman. Someone says to me, "Batman killed a guy." I'm like, "F, really? Wake the F up." I guess that's what I'm saying. Once you've lost your virginity to this effing movie and then come and say to me something like, "My superhero wouldn't do that," I'm like, "Are you serious?" I'm like, down the effing road on that. He goes on to say, "It's a cool point of view to be like, my heroes are still innocent. My heroes didn't effing lie to America. My heroes didn't embezzle money from their corporations. My heroes didn't effing commit any atrocities. That's cool, but you're living in a effing dream world." End quote on Zack Snyder.
Steampunk. Darkness. No parents.
Yeah, that's funny in the Lego movie. Like, first of all,
darkness. Brooding.
Like, this comment reads to me of what I kind of envision Zack Snyder to be. He's a popular kid that plays sports, that got into comics when he was older, and he got into those dark comics that took superheroes and subverted them and deconstructed them, and that's what he likes. So that's what his idea. That's what his idea going forward of these heroes are. However, most people don't like their heroes deconstructed, and they want their heroes to be heroes. It's fine for him to think that, but the tone he has when he's in this quote, and I saw the actual clip from this, the tone he says is like. The person that views their heroes as heroes, he's belittling them. He thinks less of them because that's not real life. That's not what really happened. In real life, your billionaire vigilante will be shucking money off the top of his corporation, stealing money from his corporation to funnel his activities as Batman. He's lied to people, and he goes out, he kills people because he's all dark and broken and stuff. Again, that is fine, but you can't fault people for not liking, just like people don't like your vision, you can't fault people for not liking theirs. So as somebody that's had to defend Zack, to read this kind of stuff and realize he doesn't get it. Like, he can have his vision, but that's not what people want to see. And we can just agree to disagree, but you have to respect that. And I get it. A lot of people don't respect his vision. And a lot of people have given him a bunch of crap over the past couple of years. But you're in a position where you can literally put the microphones in your face. You're not on Twitter. You're not on any social media spouting into the wind. You have a microphone and you're directly addressing these people. And you're saying, your vision is foolish and childish and stupid. And that is why you didn't like my movie. And that is not right.
Yeah. because he has a fundamental, and if we had not already understood this, he has a fundamentally different point of view on these characters than almost anybody else creatively who's ever been involved with them. And I include Burton in that. Because as dark and crazy as Batman Returns is, and Batman 89, Keaton's Batman is still heroic and puts forth heroic effort. Like, Snyder is at his heart a deconstructionist who, as you said, grew up in the Alan Moore era, in the Mark Miller era, and this is what he interprets these heroes to be. In the real world, this is how things would happen. He'd be a vigilante going around shooting people in, you know, with propane tanks and things. Like, this is who he thinks that Batman would be. Superman would be rejected because of his wholesomeness and goodness, and, you know, that's what he believes. The crazy part about it to me is, in a post 9/11 world, in a post George W. Bush world, in a post Iraq War, and you know, all that kind of time period, in a post Dark Knight world, you could sit in a meeting room in Burbank, California, and take a pitch meeting from this guy, and hear him pitch a cinematic universe based on these concepts, and be like, "Where do we sign?" Knowing that he was fully constrained by, you know, Nolan's vision on Man of Steel, you had him come in and make you a pitch. This is the pitch he signed off on. He presented to you, and you signed off on it.
That's the poison pill. It's like, Man of Steel is the poison pill because it wasn't a Zack Snyder story. It was written by Goyer. From what I've tangentially heard, don't know if this is true, Goyer's script was great. The things that people don't like about Man of Steel are not script issues. They're director issues.
Yes. Snapping Zod's neck, for example.
Yeah, so you factor that in with, you know, the brass that be at Warner Brothers don't seem to understand comics in the first place. So they see Man of Steel.
They understand women, though. they understand how to get actresses' roles.
Yeah, that's why he lost his job for that, right?
Roller Coaster Man was on a hell of a roller coaster ride.
Yeah, yeah. He was a big dummy. That's what it is.
He was strapped right in, taking that ride all the way.
Anyway, so they see Man of Steel. They love Man of Steel for what it is. They think it's a hit. And then they're like, well, Zach did this. Let's see him. Let's see what else he can do with all these characters. And they give it to him before Man of Steel comes out. If they wait till Man of Steel comes out, I think this can go completely differently, because I think at that point, they either make sure Nolan comes back to rein in Zack for the sequel, or they replace Zack altogether. We might get the continued universe, but I think we get a different direction on Superman, and we probably get a better firm footing. But because they didn't see the parts of Man of Steel that were going to be problematic, they went along with it, and they said, Zach can do whatever he wants. And Nolan's like, I get my producer credit money? Cool, I'm out. And Zach is left unfeathered. And this is what you get with unfeathered Zach. If he has nobody to, like, rein him in, he goes full Zach.
You get Watchmen.
But that fits for Watchmen. I don't think anything's wrong with Watchmen.
No, there isn't. It's as good of a literal interpretation of that comic as you're going to find.
Yeah. Now, but when you do it with this,
then you can't do the Watchmen treatment to Wonder Woman. You can't do the Watchmen treatment to Batman, and you certainly shouldn't do it to Superman.
Yeah, as much as people like to say Man of Steel is dour, I don't think it's dour. I think it's actually, like, fairly even. Granted, I've seen that movie a lot more times than more people, so, you know, I get little things. Batman vs Superman is like a hammer of doom that just keep hitting you in the face, like.
Be unhappy.
It's just repeatedly hitting you in the face. If you're somebody like me that's like, see the glimmer of hope in these characters, and then that hammer smacks you again, and you just keep going back for more because this is all you got. But that Zach, and then the studio gets unfettered Zach, and they're like, this is 3 hours of madness. What is, no, you can't.
What do you mean the Emperor has no clothes?
Forget the fact that I'm unhappy this entire time. It's 3 hours. You got to cut some time off of this. So that's where the studio interference line comes in, because they cut 30 minutes off. That 30 minutes they cut off was just because of the runtime. Had nothing to do creatively with Zach. The uncut version, while it is a more fleshed out story, it is also completely Zack. And it's still, while it is a more watchable movie, because, I mean, say whatever you will about Zack, he can at least make a watchable, coherent movie. That doesn't make it a enjoyable experience, which is Batman vs. Superman, whatever cut, is not. But that movie, uncut, is what Zack Snyder is. Unchained.
This quote is what Zack Snyder is.
And he says it in this next quote, when he's saying, when this movie came out, understand that Chris Terrio and I finished the script for Justice League before Batman vs. Superman came out. That right there is your entire problem with Justice League. They started working on that before Batman vs. Superman came out. And when Batman vs. Superman came out, the studio was like, what the hell? Nobody likes this. And we let him do a whole nother movie.
A very vocal minority.
Yes, he calls it very... No, man. Like he says you're in a effing dream world. I mean, this is a dream world. It's not a vocal minority. If there is a vocal minority, it's the Zaddies. It's the Zack Bros. That
the really scary version.
Yeah, they are the vocal minority. That is where we're at. But I'm not gonna read this whole quote. But he goes into what they were going to do originally with Justice League, which, oh my God, would have been, oh my God, it would have been so bad. He was going to pay off the nightmare stuff. Superman would have still been dead. They're going to pay off the nightmare stuff. I guess he would have been brought back to life by Darkseid. Darkseid was going to come apparently into the Batcave and kill Lois Lane, which is going to set off the nightmare scene that we saw in Batman vs. Superman. Batman, Flash, and Cyborg have a discussion about sending the Flash back in time, which we saw in Nightmare, to warn Bruce about Superman because Lois is dead. And they're going to work out some hokey time travel mechanisms because in this reality, the Flash can only go back in time to the same spot. So he has to go back when the Earth is relatively in the same spot. Otherwise, he'll go back and he'll just be in the vacuum of space and die. This is what he wanted to do. I'm just telling you what he wants to do. I'm not telling you it makes any sense, but this is where we're at. So they had two choices of where to go. It was either the one we saw in Nightmare or another time. And Bruce was like, well, which time were you going to... He asked Cyborg, which time were you originally going to send him back? So send him back to the time we saw in Nightmare. Bruce was like, no, because that didn't work. Send him to the other one. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that does, but that's what this movie was going to be. It was going to probably be more dour, angry stuff with a Superman he would have finally liked, which would have been Darkseid Superman that probably kicks the crap out of Justice League. And then the movie still ends on a downer. Somebody else, I mean, Lois is dead. And according to Kevin Smith, like, the third movie is going to be the Justice League making a last stand by going to Apocalypse. At the end of the movie, which feeds into his thoughts about Batman and his violence and stuff, the end of the third one was going to end up with Batman end up dying in some heroic act to then complete his circle of redemption, which was going to be the whole point of him in these movies. That's where we're going to be with Zack Snyder's Justice League. So again, I don't fault Zack. It's his vision. His vision is not palatable for the masses, and that's fine. Who I fault in all of this is the studio, mainly Roller Coaster Man, who made sure the Justice League came out in 2017, even when they replaced Zack with Josh. Josh is like, can I have some more time? And they're like, no. That's the studio's fault. So, in this whole saga, we have a man with a vision that doesn't work. And when the people figure out that his vision doesn't work, instead of him saying, let's stop, let's put it to the side, let's work on some stuff, and then keep going, they're like, no, we're going to keep spinning and work on stuff and move it ever so slightly and put it right here, and it's not going to work, and we're going to play like we're surprised. That's the story of Zack Snyder's Justice League. I wish Zack all the best. That quote, that condescending quote, is complete and utter bullshit, but... I understand he's still working through some things, so I can give him a little slack. But it does not make me feel good as a person that has defended him for about 4 years, and that this is what happens.
Indeed.
I'm done.
So Chad, the Avengers are going to face Thanos. They've been defeated. They actually have to avenge now. Do you know how many films it took for the Avengers to lose?
They really only lost this last one.
Right. Uh-huh. So they defended the Earth from the Chitauri invasion.
Uh-huh.
And captured Loki.
Uh-huh.
They defeated Ultron.
Uh-huh.
And kept Sokovia from crashing to the ground.
Uh-huh.
Got everybody off with the helicarriers. All that good stuff. Vision kills Ultron. Mm-hmm. And it's not until the third film in which the Avengers actually get defeated and have to avenge, actually.
Mm-hmm.
How many years was it from the very first Avengers movie to Avengers Infinity War?
Infinity War was that. So 5 years?
To 2012 to 2018.
6 years, okay.
Yeah. 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And how many movies in between those Avengers movies?
Roughly, about two, but it's really like, it was like two and then three, something like that.
No,
two and then
yeah,
four. It was three.
So between the original Avengers movie, you have the original Avengers movie. After that, you have Iron Man 3, you have Thor the Dark World,
uh-huh.
you have Captain America Winter Soldier, and uh-huh. you have Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1.
Uh-huh.
Then you have Avengers Age of Ultron.
So we're at two?
Right.
Okay.
And then you start phase three, so you get Doctor Strange and Civil War, and then you get Guardians 2,
uh-huh.
Guardians Volume 2, you get Spider-Man Homecoming and Thor Ragnarok, then you get Black Panther,
and
then you get Infinity War.
Yep.
And again, the team itself has only been together for two movies, and then victorious twice.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really only fully assembled at the third act of the first movie.
Yeah.
That's way more development than that Justice League was ever going to have.
Oh, yeah.
And they were going to lose, just like they lost to Doomsday.
Right? I mean, they lost to Doomsday. They were going to lose in Justice League 1, only to win in Justice League 2.
No, technically Justice League 3, because they were going to kill off Lois Lane in Justice League 2.
I forget. Whatever. What? I don't care.
He was going to do all of that with no development. He's just going to murder people. For the fun of it. The guy fundamentally does not understand these characters the way that most of civilization understands these characters. And hiring him to do a Justice League movie or a Batman versus Superman movie, when he sat there and he gave you this kind of stuff in a pitch meeting, and you still greenlighted him and gave him all the money... That's on you, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. Him getting Man of Steel is fine because Nolan picked him to get Man of Steel. He didn't pitch. I don't think he pitched him. I'm sure he did, but he pitched him off of the script that they had. But everything after that?
Yeah, but even then, as you said, it's Snyder's decision to have Zod break his neck. To have Superman break Zod's neck. It's Snyder's idea to have the bus scene... To have, maybe you should have let the bus of school children die.
I
know that you defend that, and that's fine. And I get what you're saying. Logically, it does make sense. But all of that stuff that people don't like, it was all Zach decisions. Those weren't in Gorier's script, as far as we can tell.
So I think the scene between Jonathan Clark is in the script. There might be more to it, where Jonathan actually says, of course I don't mean that, or something to that effect. Or... is up to another director to interpret it in a way that people don't feel like Jonathan's saying, let him die, which is how a lot of people read that scene. But the whole third act, like the world engine destroying Metropolis, you could still do that and not make it look the way it does, not make it come off the way that it does. And that's all Zach. That whole third act is all Zach. And even me watching it the first time, I'm like, because it came right after Smallville, it feels like a whole lot of too... It feels too much. And then just the world engine destroying things feels like too much. And then watching Superman and Zod go through buildings, it still continues to feel like that, because he makes it a point to show that there are people still in the city. And another director could have done all of that, but in that fight, all Superman has to do is like look over, see people, attempt to go, Zod stops him. That's it. And that scene comes off completely different, because Superman is making the attempt, the bad guy is stopping him.
Oh, he's making an attempt at the end too. He sees that little family on vacation.
Yeah, but see, that pays off more if the whole fight, he's like, when they're knocking buildings over, he sees people there, he tries to go and save them, Zod stops him. And then he sees, and they're fighting some more, he sees somebody else over there, he tries to save him, Zod stops him. So, and then Zod tells him, this only ends with one of us dying. And then you get to the end, and you're at that family. Then you're like, well, this whole fight, every time he tried to do something, Zod stopped him. And now he's sitting there like, I'm going to burn these suckers to the ground. And he did what he did. And more people accept it. And it has a better payoff. And I think everybody is relatively happy with the way that movie ends.
I agree. All right, so that'll about do it for this week's episode of the Movies on the Brain podcast.
I'm tired.
If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At the Mets Theory.
Thank you very much. And remember, we are exactly one whole month away from Avengers Endgame. We will know who lives, who dies, and what kind of barf technology is used. Thank you very much. Pleasant evening.